Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was coming to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it was just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus." He said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he was going further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it's nearly evening and the day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread.
We're on the road to Emmaus. And what better text can you look at when you're thinking of, you're feeling downcast? So I'm going to take us straight into that text and reflect on that. Because so we've got two disciples, two travelers, two people who are on a journey, and things haven't worked out as they had quite hoped in the case of our two travelers. And they had hoped that for them, the grand picture of God, which was God coming and over, in their minds, God coming and overthrowing their oppressors, would now be actuated. But this has ended in crucifixion. And so it's a massive disappointment for them. They're downcast. And in fact, the likelihood is actually it's a husband and wife. So we've got Cleopas. But there is a Mary who was the wife of a Cleopas who was present at the cross. And so there's a possibility it's those two. And if you follow the tense of the conversation in that, they're having a discussion. But the word changes, so the discussion gets more heated as they go along. So it's got to be a husband and wife, isn't it? So it's at that point of a heated conversation or more intense conversation that Jesus appears. That's encouraging too, I think. So that's it. They have lost hope, which often happens when you get difficult news. And they're arguing, which often happens when you're disappointed and disillusioned. And it's precisely at this point that Jesus shows up, only they don't recognize him. That's what we see in this text. And yet, he walks with them. In our situation, for Pixie and I, over the last few months, things haven't worked out straightforwardly as we would really have liked. And so there's a sense of disappointment with that at the moment. And in your situation, it may be that that has been the case for you on your journey. In some way, you think actually life hasn't turned out in the way that I thought it might have turned out, and you may carry disappointments. What we need to be, if we look at this text, is we need to be alert to what Jesus is doing alongside us, even when we don't recognize him. For he will be about his promises and his purposes. Make no mistake, Jesus is doing something, and he's working his purposes out. And we need to listen carefully and be attentive to that. So I just want us to look and reflect on this text for a moment, because our two companions encountered Jesus in the midst of everyday things. It's not some special event or special hyped up moment. It is actually as in walking along a road. You'll see in verse 13, in verse 15, verse 28, each of those refers to the fact that they're walking. They're just walking. They are having an argument, which is an everyday thing, and Jesus turns up. But it's also in a moment of grief, as we'll see in verse 17, that Jesus turns up. And it's a simple meal at a table that Jesus turns up. They're not special places. They're not even in church. None of them. Though that doesn't give you an excuse not to be here, because the scripture says don't neglect gathering together, and we want to be together. So, but they are in the everyday events. Jesus is present in your everyday events. So if you're working this week, Jesus is going to be there. If you're at home this week, Jesus is going to be there. If you're at the supermarket, Jesus is going to be there. If you're having a conversation with somebody, anybody, Jesus is going to be there. If you're going to invite somebody to Alpha, Jesus is definitely going to be there. You know, he will be with you in all those things. And we need to learn to be attentive to what he is doing. So think about the places this week that you will encounter and know that Jesus is going to be there. As some of you will know, that over the last few months, just in November, I was on the radiotherapy table, having radiotherapy treatment. And I have to tell you, most clearly and definitely, Jesus was there. I encountered Jesus in a special way, and I have written 20 meditations related to that. And I will, at some point, put those out more in the public domain. But Jesus was definitely there in that experience, and I'm very grateful for it. But I want to come back to our travelers again, because they are sad and can't believe that Jesus, that in fact they say, we can't believe that you're the only one, you're the only one in this place who doesn't know what's going on. Is that not a joke? You know, Jesus is there, and they're saying to him, I can't believe it, you're the only one who doesn't know what's going on. In fact, he is the only one who does know what's going on. There's an irony. Luke is quite clever in the way he narrates this as they say that. But what Jesus does is relocates them in the grand narrative. So remember, we're on this journey that is a big grand narrative. The purpose and plan of God is coming through. And Jesus wants to relocate them in that because they've lost it. In fact, their perception of the grand narrative is a misunderstanding of what's going on. They think that actually Jesus coming, he was going to be the one that's going to deliver them, as I said. But actually, Jesus needs to relocate their perspective so that they see it's a different kind of narrative, but it's the true one. Remember I said, and I've said all the way through, that actually probably the best parable that we can reflect on this is the parable of the vineyard, where God, who's the creator, sends his servants through to look for fruitfulness. And each time, those servants are rejected. And often we interpret that like it was the Jewish people, but it is the world. The world has chosen to reject God as creator. And as a result of that, we are seeing the carnage that we're experiencing today. But God's narrative is different. If we get God's narrative in place, which is God wanting to form a relationship with each one of us, and that's his plan and purpose, to draw all things together under one head, even Christ, Jesus is relocating their perspective on that in this story. So we read, beginning with Moses and the prophets, he opens up something to them. So in fact, three times in this chapter, which is why you realize Luke shows this as really important, this narrative, in verse 6 and 7, it says this, these are the people at the empty tomb. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified and on the third day rise again. Right? That's the narrative, the grand narrative. So they're reminding them of that. Right in the center of this chapter on the resurrection, we read this, which is the text we're on. Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. Okay? And then we read later on, at the end of this chapter, in another resurrection appearance, he says to them, these are my words that I spoke to you while I was still with you, that everything written about me in the law and of Moses and the prophets and the Psalms must be fulfilled. Then he opened their minds to understand the scriptures, and he said to them, thus it is written that the Messiah is to suffer and to rise from the dead on the third day, and that repentance and forgiveness of sins is to be proclaimed in his name to all nations, beginning from Jerusalem. So, their perspective is this way, and Jesus relocates it this way. You need to understand that narrative. It's framed in this chapter. What Luke is trying to do is to demonstrate the significance of this seismic moment that the resurrection is, but this seismic moment in the grand narrative. Remember I talked about the five acts, like a Shakespeare play? The first act is creation and the fall. The second act is God forming a relationship with a community and people. The third act is that God comes and walks among us. That's the gospel story, right? And this gospel story, this moment, this third act ends now at the resurrection. We're now moving into the fourth act, which is the act of the people of God, God working through the people of God, equipping them by his Spirit, so we continue on, okay? So we're jumping now from the third act into the fourth act. And Luke wants us to know this is really important. And so what he does, you've got to look at some clues in this, he uses a meal as a significant thing. So you may remember the first meal in the scriptures is what? No, the first meal in the scriptures is Adam and Eve. And what do? They eat. They eat of the fruit. It's not an apple. Just thought I'd say that. But most paintings say that it's an apple. It never says it's an apple. It does say it's a fruit. But let's be graceful about this. So eating of the fruit. That's the first thing. And what happens when they eat the fruit? Their eyes are opened. Now remember that. Their eyes are opened and they choose to hide from God. Okay? In the last meal that Luke has in his gospel, there is a meal. And when that meal is introduced to them or is broken, what happens? Their eyes are opened. And they realize that Jesus is among them. This is important for Luke, because in the first one, their eyes are opened and they're running away from God. In the last one, their eyes are opened and they encounter God. They see him. So this is the new era. This is the shift, okay, that we see in this text. But he also frames it in another way, which is really interesting, which I didn't realize until I did some reading this week. And that is, it's framed in his gospel with Mary and Joseph. Because you may remember Mary and Joseph are going away from Jerusalem at one point, and they don't realize that Jesus is not with them. You got that? Okay, so that's at the beginning of Luke's gospel. And they go to, when they find Jesus in the temple, he says, don't you remember I should be about my Father's business? Okay, so at the end of Luke's gospel, what do we have? Two characters who don't realize that Jesus is with them. And he opens their eyes, and what does he say? Don't you realize I've been about my Father's business? Don't you realize this is what's going on? So Luke is saying here, this is really important in this, that we've got this shaping, not only in the grander narrative in the whole Bible, but also in the Gospel of Luke. They're twos, each time. So this is the crucial turning point from Act 3 to Act 4 in the grand narrative, God's plan to making a seismic shift into the new era of the resurrection. Everything changes from now on. Everything. This is the era of resurrection. The travelers, there are two travelers, sense this and urge Jesus to stay with them. They don't want him to leave. And what is crucial for us as a church community is in the midst of everything, we need to keep our eyes on Jesus. We had a wonderful time this week with Ezra Unwin. A little Ezra, he's David and Vicky's little boy. He came and just had an ice cream with us, and we were playing some football, and then we were playing catch with the football. It's very funny watching a little kid when you're trying to throw, because he's like, the ball is coming. It's like, oh, it's already there, you know. And he throws it back. We had a good time throwing back, and he was cheering when I caught it. He didn't catch it very much. And I said, Ezra, what you need to do is you need to look at the ball. And it's like, oh, the ball's coming. You know, eyes on the ball. It's very important when you're catching. Eyes on the ball. And it's the same with us in our experience here. Whatever happens, eyes are not on the ball. They're on Jesus. We need to make sure we keep our eyes on Jesus if we're going to move forward. That's crucial for us. And so we must urge him to stay with us, no matter what. Another point that's really interesting about this text, which you see in verse 30, is that it is in brokenness that God is revealed. Okay? It's not in triumph, but it is in brokenness. So when he was at table with them, he took bread, blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened. And I think that's really significant in terms of the grand narrative and in terms of the purposes of God. It's in brokenness. People can identify with God, with a God of brokenness, and with a people of brokenness, much better than they can identify with a God who is triumphant and with a people who are so triumphant. Do you understand what I'm saying here? It's really important. It feels all upside down to be a people struggling. It feels like it shouldn't be that way. We shouldn't be a people struggling. Why? Because, you know, we're saved by grace, and we should be triumphant in the gospel. But it just feels all upside down to be a people that are struggling. But I want to quote the Mandalorian. This is the way. I needed to get that. I've been thinking about that for a long time. I just want to get out there. This is the way. It is not in triumph. It's in struggle. It's not in winning everything. It's in our vulnerability that the true gospel is revealed and that Jesus is revealed. It's interesting that the word Israel, which is the community of people that were formed in the Old Testament, the word Israel means struggle. And, of course, one of the things I've been reflecting on is 2 Corinthians. In 2 Corinthians, Paul talks about this too. He says this. This is the beginning of his second letter. We do not want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters, of the affliction we experienced in Asia, for we were so utterly unbearably crushed that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death so that we would rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. See that? This is Paul. He's not saying we're all victorious. He's saying we had the sentence of death. We felt unbearably crushed. Why? So that we would rely not on ourselves, but on God. And then later on in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he says these words, verse 7 of chapter 4. We have this treasure in clay jars so that it may be made clear that this extraordinary power belongs to God and does not come from us. We're afflicted in every way. Hear this. We're afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying in the body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be made visible in our bodies. This is the way. This is the way of the cross. This is the way that we see. It is often
aware of brokenness. I want to illustrate this by a moment when we were serving at Lee Abbey a number of years ago, which is an international community in the UK, and we had people come from about 8,000, 10,000 people a year would come on conferences and retreats. And we were doing what was called a divorce recovery weekend, which is for people who have gone through a broken relationship and they're in pain. And part of our ministry was to try and get alongside people so that they would know the resurrection hope of Jesus in their brokenness. And at the end of that weekend, we had a communion, a Eucharist, whatever you want to call it, the breaking of bread. We had that, and we invited people if they wanted to come and participate. They didn't have to, but if they wanted to come and participate, they could. And just before that happened, one of our guests turned to one of our counselors or companions alongside and just said, I'm not going to communion. I can't bring. I'm so angry with God about my brokenness and what's happened. How can I go to communion and take bread and wine, so on? And the friend said, "Look, why don't you? Because we've been traveling this whole weekend together. Why don't you just come and be with us? You don't have to take communion. You can just sit there." So in the end, they decided they would come. So it was a whole group of people sitting there. And just before we came to the communion prayer, which I was going to do, we were singing a hymn. And it was one of those moments when suddenly a voice, not a loud voice, just an inner voice that comes in to my mind. And the Spirit says, David, you need to say something before you start this communion prayer. So I'm trying to sing this song. Have you ever tried to do that? Sing a song and actually you're trying to listen to God at the same time. It's like driving a car and trying to listen to God at the same time. Don't close your eyes when you're doing that one. But here I am. I'm trying to listen to God. And this is what God said to me. Basically, He said, I needed to talk about lament for a moment because we've lost the art of lament in our ministry, which is that we come to God and we're honest and vulnerable with God and with one another about that. But I said, thankfully, God never misses the moment to share with us his brokenness. Because here on this table, we have symbols of brokenness, broken bread and wine outpoured. And here on this table, we remember someone who was misunderstood, whose love was scorned, who was rejected, who was exchanged for another, who was abused. All this is on the table before us. And the woman turned to the friend who'd been with her and said, I'm taking communion. It's in brokenness that God is revealed and seen. But with it, of course, comes the hope of the resurrection. This is in the midst of this resurrection story that we see this moment. I nearly finished. I want to say the other thing that we see here is it's in talking that God is revealed. You see, each time in verse 27, verse 32, verse 35, and verse 36, what's happening? People are talking. They're sharing their story with one another. They're running to one another and sharing the story. And what's happening is that as they're sharing that story, Jesus appears in their midst. What does he do? They come and they meet in the room and they all say, hey, guess what? We've seen Jesus. They share that story and suddenly he's in the middle of the room and he says, peace be with you, which is another joke. Don't you think? Isn't that the last thing you think? It's suddenly all the doors are locked, everybody's terrified, and then suddenly Jesus appears and says, hi, peace be with you. That is the last thing that people are going to feel, is it not? You know, it suddenly appears in the middle of the room, what are you going to do? What is this? That's why they thought he was a ghost. So how did he do that? Peace be with you. He appears when they're sharing that story. Sharing the story. And the story of their encounter and transformation, Jesus shows up in the midst. I want to show one story that we experienced at Lee Abbey. We had one particular time, two women came to our place and said, we would like to book your conference place for the whole weekend. Only just one thing we need to tell you is we don't have any money. We're going to pray the money in. So normally you're kind of slightly cautious about that because this could be really risky for your place. It's a big loss for the conference place and all that kind of thing. But our operations manager just sensed that God might be in this moment. And so he came and talked to us, and he said, I think this is a moment where we might need to open our place up. And they wanted to bring a bunch of people from a housing estate in Southampton, which is right on the south coast. It's a pretty rough area, but they said they're going to pray it in. And a Pentecostal pastor who was in a church in that area said, we'll put the money up for two coaches. And then these women went and knocked on the doors of people who weren't church people, but knocked on their houses and said, do you want to come for a free holiday? So they were putting the stakes up. So they just knocked and said, do you want to come for a free holiday? And they filled two coaches. And these two coachloads of people all turned up. And many of them had not been on holiday. Many of them had not even traveled out of the estate. When they got off the coach, they looked like they were in shock. And they sort of wandered around, and a lot of them spilled out of the coaches and went onto the front. And we had this glorious front guard lawn that looked over the coast, and you had cliffs and the sea and the beach at Lee Abbey and so on. And they're all standing. There was kids running about everywhere, which was lovely. And there was this one guy who had he had a sort of string vest thing, all right? He's a big guy, string vest, tattoos all over him. And he's standing. There's a kid clinging onto his leg here, another one under his leg here. And I go and say, hi. Welcome, and he says he's crying, and I didn't want to mention that, but I just stood there, and he said this is amazing. I said yeah. He said, is this heaven? And I said, well, we try and get you know, and he said this is amazing. He was just overwhelmed. And over that weekend, we traveled with this whole group and expressed hospitality as we normally do, and so on. And then on the Sunday morning, I went down into breakfast. This is about 100 people in the room, and most of them part of this group. And I say, look, we've expressed hospitality to you. We want, we're just going to ask one favor. We would like to invite you to come up the hill to the top, which is on the top of the cliffs, and there's three crosses up there, and we'd like you to come up to those crosses this morning after breakfast. Join us if you want to, and we're just going to tell you why we are here. So I had no idea how many people, because it was a really riotous weekend, no idea how many people would come. So I'll meet you outside at 10 o'clock, outside the front, and we'll see. And we went to the front, and everybody was there, just the whole thing. And we had to get Land Rovers and stuff to from our estate team to shift some people up there who wouldn't be able to walk up the hill. And then for the rest of them, I said, if you'd like to follow me. And it just felt like Chaucer's Canterbury Tales. You know, this is really motley crew of all of us making our way up this line, right up to the crosses at the top. And then we stood at the crosses, and people sat down on the grass. And we retold the story of the cross from the perspective of Mary Magdalene, from the perspective of Simon Peter, from the perspective of John, from the perspective of the thief who was on the cross, from the perspective of the centurion who witnessed the crucifixion. Retold that story, and then somebody, one of our team, sang, "When I Survey the Wondrous Cross," into the wind, a cappella. It was like one, you know, when the hair stands on the back of your neck and you think, whoa, this is a moment. That was one of those moments. And I had a nail, an 8-inch nail, which, as you do, as I said, I had an 8-inch nail. I said, you know, this is the kind of nail that would have been used for nailing Jesus to the cross. And two teenagers got up and they said, can we just look at the nail? And they got there and they were trying to push the nail into their hands, trying to imagine what that must have been like. And then we said, we're going down to the beach now because one of our community wants to be baptized in the sea, and one of your group has asked to be baptized. So we're going down to the beach, and we're going to baptize them in the water. So I said, if you want to come and be part of that baptism, please come and be part of that baptism. So turn around, it's like Canterbury, Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, all the way down a hill. We're going down the lane, down on the beach, and everybody, and there's lots of people on the beach already because it's also a public beach, and they come down, and this whole crowd go down to the bottom. We gather round. And then we say to our community member, you know, why do you want to be baptized? And she said, you know, she'd come to Lee Abbey and she hadn't really known Jesus. And now she's encountered Jesus. She wants to be baptized in the sea. So great. And so we said to their person, why do you want to be baptized? And she said, well, I live with a drug dealer and I've been addicted on various stuff for a long time, but I want to make a new start with Jesus. And this weekend has triggered that for me, so I would like to be baptized. So he said, this is good. So then I then said, does anybody else want to be baptized? And this guy steps forward, really gaunt guy, looking tattoos again all over the place, not the same one as I spoke to, but I said, do you want to be baptized? He said, yes. I said, why do you want to be baptized? And he said, well, I'm the drug dealer that lives with her. I want to make a new start with Jesus. So I said, okay, this is good. You know, does anybody else want to be baptized? Somebody else steps forward. Does anybody else want to be baptized? Another person steps forward. And another. And another. And another. And another. And I would have to do that 21 times. 21 people stepped forward from the group and said they want to give their life to Jesus and be baptized in the sea today. So we had a line of people going out into the water. And our two people who were doing the baptisms, which is the Pentecostal pastor came with them, and one of our team, out there in the sea as the waves were coming. And the first one was our community member. And we always ask the question, you know, is this your faith before they're baptized? And then they have to say, this is my faith. And I still remember, and it always makes me emotional. I'm going to try and do this without getting too emotional. You can look down this line out to sea, and you see our community member, who's a German girl, she's asked the question, is this your faith? And she throws her arms in the air, and she yells across the whole beach, this is my faith! And then she disappears in the water. And she's down, and each one is going down, surrendering their life to Jesus. Jesus showed up because the story is shared. It goes on. An alpha is an opportunity to share the story, and it goes on. And if we're courageous enough to step out and invite somebody and travel with them on that, Jesus will show up. It will not always be in moments of triumph. It will be in our vulnerability as we ask somebody, in our vulnerability as we travel together, because this is the way. Let's remember it. It's so interesting, isn't it? Twos on a journey. The twos, as we remember Adam and Eve on their journey, at eyes that opened. The twos, as we remember Mary and Joseph, and they discover that Jesus is not with them. And then they discover that he's about his father's business. The twos in Emmaus who are walking along and they think it's all despondent and defeated, and they discover Jesus is with them. The two here, as we've been coming on a journey, and it's not been straightforward, but hey, guess what? Jesus is with us. And each one of us, whoever we are, on our journey, hey, guess what? Jesus is with us. So let's just pause for a moment and remind ourselves that he is here, even if you don't recognize him. And he's there present to you. So you might want to close your eyes or just be still. And remember, I'm going to lead a prayer thanking him that he is with us. But why don't you, in your own heart of hearts, right at this moment, in your heart, say, thank you, Jesus, that you are here. Help me to see you. Lord, you're a God of resurrection. Now, this is a path that is not straightforward. It's a path of vulnerability, of crucifixion, of rejection, of brokenness. And through that path, into newness, a resurrection story. For this is the way. We hold on to you in this new beginning. Amen. Shall we stand, and we're going to continue to worship.